Ladies, good morning, and thank you very, very much for being here. It has been requested that our standard Hilchos Shabbos shiur be kind of suspended so that we can have some kind of Pesach input. I was thinking a lot about what to do for this particular shiur, but because this is a halacha shiur, there is an inyan to do some halachas. I've got an idea outside of halacha as well that I may want to share with you if we've got time. But there's a lot of very pertinent halachas which I've been teaching people in my other shiurim. I've been giving over the halachas, and people really didn't seem very clear on them. And I think it's so important just to make sure that we've got some like real good basic hold on the halachas for certain things that's going on in Pesach, certainly for your kavanas, what you've got in mind, etc., what we're doing. So first things first, I'd like to bring you some laws from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, section 119, which deals specifically with the laws of Pesach night. And there's some very interesting laws of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Kuf Yud Tes. It says like this: Pesach is one of the few exceptions where we cannot bring in Yom Tov early. The truth is, Diane Westheimer said there's creeping frumkeit in Manchester. That's the term he used. Creeping frumkeit, where you don't bring in second day Yom Tov early. The truth is, it's halachically perfectly permissible to bring in second day Yom Tov early, but he says you won't find a minion like that in North Manchester. He says halachically there's no problem on second day Yom Tov to bring it in as early as you would bring in Shabbos early in the summer. But people have this thing, we want the full 2 days. He says that is a chumrah which is not in any way halachically necessary. Okay? But there is a halachic necessity to wait till nightfall for Leil Seder. Pesach night can only be started at night. And when we mean night, we mean Tzeitzer Kachovim, the emergence of 3 medium-sized stars, which today we can only do with mathematical calculations because people, A, aren't very good at recognizing them between large and small stars, and B, is there so much light pollution. Yeah? So basically, we only do it mathematically today. So you look on the Luach, and you see what time Seder Kachovim is, and that's the only time you can start Pesach. Now, why is that? The Seder is the beginning, the Kiddush, I'm sorry, is the beginning of the Seder. There's like 15 steps to Seder. The first one is making Kiddush. Right, so the beginning of Kiddush is already starting your Seder. Kiddush must start after nightfall. Why is that? The reason is it says in Shemois Yud Beis Ches that they've got to eat meat on this night. When the Korban Pesach was given in Mitzrayim, it had to be eaten at night. Today we can't give the Korban Pesach, so we make a Seder and we eat matzah. Okay, I'm going to get to that. Which means the matzah must be eaten at halachic night, which is the reason we must wait until full night before beginning the Seder. That's point number one. Does that make sense? Okay. Lots and lots of things about stimulating kids to ask questions. One of the most important things about the Seder night is to make it unusual. We do really weird things like cover the plate, don't cover the plate, lift it up, don't lift it up, uncover it in the middle of something, don't cover it up, lift up the cup. We want it to become a non-birote experience so that you ask questions and you don't say, oh, we know this story. Yeah, yeah, Moses came along and he told Pharaoh what to do, whatever, right? The point is that every year you should find out something more about it. Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, my Rosh Hashiva in Tyra Or, he used to say that the most important people at the Seder are the women. He goes, we came out of Mitzrayim in the schus of the women. And often the women have been working so hard to make Pesach that when they get to the Seder table, they're very quick to fall asleep, especially if they drink wine. Okay? So it is really behooves you to try to, like, because it's really about you. If you know you're going to knock yourself out by drinking hard wine, then you should definitely use grape juice. Okay? You can use grape juice and things like that. If there is a hider, to use red wine. Now remember, we talked about sever, but I know we've not done sever. There's an idea, if you want to put in a little drop of red wine at the bottom of your cup, then dilute with white wine or grape juice, that's great. You don't have to do it. If you only want white wine or fizzy botanura, you're good to go, knock yourself out, that's fantastic. But if you want to do the hider, if you want to do the splendorousness, the beauty of utilizing red wine, then if you say, look, I can't take it, the red wine's too strong, if you put a bit of red wine at the bottom and then dilute it with white wine and it goes red, you've got all the hidurim. What we would try to tell you, though, is don't fill it up with white wine and then put a splash of red wine in. Because according to some opinions, doing that is mummish like making a dye. And we're very muckbid regarding liquids. It's not a problem. If you do it, you're not over. But there is an opinion to say that you should put the red wine in and dilute the red rather than dye the white grape juice with red wine, if anyone's interested in that. Where do we learn out that we should be doing any hidurim of any mitzvah at all? A hidur is a beautification. So if you buy a mezuzah case, you buy a beautiful mezuzah case. Where do we learn in the Torah that we should make our mitzvahs beautiful? Okay, what could you want? Right, in the Shira. So who said that? Ze keliva anvehu elokim ro'am menhu. This is my God and I will glorify him. He's the God of my forefathers. Those are the children that were thrown into the Nile to be eaten by crocodiles, that was under a gezeirah from Pharaoh because he had his star sign readers say the Jewish Messiah is going to have a downfall through water, and it's going to be male, and he's going to have a downfall through water. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Bang on. Moshe Rabbeinu is a male, and he's going to have his downfall through water. How's that going to happen? When he hit the rock and the water came out, that was his problem. And I can't get into Eretz Yisrael. They saw correctly. There's going to be a male and he's going to have a problem with water. First of all, look, we don't know what the problem is. Let's make sure that the water he's going to have a downfall with is going to be the Nile. So chuck all the baby boys into the Nile. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that an amazing idea? So all the baby boys were being chucked into the Nile. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He was very upset about what was going on. He took those boys and took them upstream, which is an ace in and of itself, because the Nile flows into a delta into the Mediterranean. And he took them upstream towards Ethiopia, the direction into Africa. And he washed them up on the beach, on the banks. And he miraculously sustained them, the rocks. And he like washed them up. The Medrash says he washed them up on like a rocky shore, like a bank that was uninhabited. And the rocks started to exude a very nourishing oil from which the babies would suckle with. And because of that, it was like they were eating. They got up and they grew up. And they went back to Mitzrayim when they got old enough. And they took part of the Exodus. Amazing, amazing, amazing nace. While they were babies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said, I'm going to have to look after them because there's no one else to look after them. If there's no one to look after, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take it on himself. That's why if there's an orphan, he's got to be looked after by a family. What happens if there's no families to look after him? Who has to look after him? The local Beis Din. It's on the local Beis Din's shoulders to look after anyone that doesn't have anyone to look after them. That's the Beis Din's job. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm Beis Din. So I've got to look after them. There's no one to look after them. I personally will raise them. Which means the Shekhinah resided with these children. Now, these children didn't know any better. They just grew up with the Shekhinah. What do they know? You know, that's daddy. That's all he's looking after. They got up, they got strong, and they had this natural instinctive urge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in them, much like a homing pigeon, to go north, to go to Egypt. Now, when they went to Egypt, they weren't raised by their regular family. They weren't raised by their family, but they came out with everyone. And at the splitting of Yom Suf, there was such an intense revelation of Hashem's presence there. That's what they felt when they were growing up. They recognized that as dad. They said, that's my parent. I know because I grew up with that. That's how I feel at home. And they said, Zeke Leva Anveyu. This is my God and I'm going to glorify him. And I came from a man who, this is the God of my forefathers. How can they say the God of my forefathers? They didn't have fathers. Whoever their fathers were, paternally, they didn't know who they were. They were just kids that were raised randomly. They felt as if I'm connected to my people. Very interesting idea. He's the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Who are those people?
These kids, yeah. They were the babies that were stolen from the Egyptian taskmasters that were thrown into the Nile.
Yeah, but we don't know who they are, names of them.
I don't have names of these. No, there will be hundreds of thousands of them.
Did they get back with their mothers?
I don't know if they ever went back to their paternal families. I don't know what happened to them. But the point is that they were the ones that said, this is my God and I'm going to glorify him. From there we learn out. What do they mean? They said, whenever I get an opportunity to be able to do something to get close to him, I'm going to make it really nice. Nicer than usual. So you need a mezuzah. So all you need is like a scroll and put blue tag and put it on your door. Finished. You're Yotzi, right? Now we get a beautiful case, plate it in silver, do something nice, put it up there, it'll be lovely, right? So that's where we learn out. The idea of Zei Keli Van Behu, this is my God and I glorify him. So we learn out you should do any hidu mitzvah. A hidu mitzvah of the wine is to have it red. Okay, it's an interesting concept, yeah? So that's why, if you don't have to do it, but if you want to be Mekayim, this Hidur Mitzvah, then put the red wine in first. Does that make sense? Okay, yeah, first thing, is everyone okay with that? Okay, so the Kiddush immediately starts off the Seder. Now, something really important is happening here. Whenever you are approached by a cyclic mitzvah, that's a mitzvah which comes round periodically, before you do the mitzvah, you make a Shehechianu. Thank you, Hashem, for sustaining me and making me alive so I can be able to get to another opportunity to be able to do this mitzvah. This is a new mitzvah opportunity. Now, whoever's making Kiddush, either for you or whoever's making Kiddush, they're going to recite a Shehechianu in the middle of the Kiddush. That's what they're going to do. They're going to end the Kiddush off with the Shehechianu, then you're going to sit, then you're going to lean, and you're going to drink. Okay? If you lean, okay, women don't have a custom to lean, but if, when you drink, the men will lean. Right? Okay. Now, the question is, what's the Shehechianu on? If you're not saying the Shehechianu, you've for sure got to have in mind that the Shehechianu is covering you for all the mitzvahs that you're about to hear. For instance, when you go hear Kriyas Megillah, it's a cyclic mitzvah, Midrabanan, and they make a Shehechianu before they do it. What does that Shehechianu go on? That goes on the recitation of the Megillah you're about to hear, and it goes on your Matanis Le'ev Yonin, and your Mishloch Manas, and your Mishdei. It goes on the meal, it goes on your gifts to the poor, it goes on your gifts that you're going to give to friends, and it goes on here in the Megillah. All those four mitzvahs, all beginning with a mem, are all being benched when you hear the Shehechianu. You've got to have that in mind. This bracha is covering me for all my mitzvahs associated with the day. Does that make sense? What's the Shehechianu on? If you're not making the Shehechianu, some people make it under their breath.
We said it already on the candles.
No, okay, so they're going to say it again. They're going to say it again. You're right, okay, so those who say, some say, actually, you wait until the Kiddush, some say you make it on the candles, etc. But if you, at the Kiddush, they're going to say Shehechianu. What's the Shehechianu going on, and what should you have in mind? If you're going to say the Shehechianu at the candles and not be Yotzi the Kiddush, then you have to this in mind at the candles. This is what you've got to do. I.e., what's the Shehechianu? If the Shehechianu is not on the candles, lighting the candles is no direct mitzvah. The only mitzvah of Shabbos and Yontif is to have Shalom. The candles, the only time lighting candles is a mitzvah is...
Hanukkah.
Very good. Woo! Wow. Wake up. Focus. Coffee. Okay. That's it. The only time we ever have any mitzvah to light candles is Hanukkah. The lighting of candles for Shabbos and Yom Tov is not a mitzvah in and of itself. That's just to trigger the mitzvah of Shalom. The mitzvah is Shalom and light breeds Shalom. Does that make sense? That's why technically, in a pinch, you could make the brocha of Neris over electric lights. Okay? Because it's not the flame itself that we need, but you need the flame for the Neris of Hanukkah. You can't do that over electricity. Okay, so how much locus can use torch? The answer is no, probably not. Okay, it has to be an actual flame for the menorah. So what are we making the Shehechianu over? It's really important, you probably really write this down. These are the four things you've got to have in mind. There's four mitzvahs you have to be Mekayim on Pesach. I'm going to give them to you in order of importance. Number one is... Achilas matzah. Eating of the matzah, that's the first bite of matzah you're going to have. That's a three-line whip. It's one of the most important mitzvahs in the entire year. Well, that makes it even better. Achilas, you should know. Achilas matzah. It's so important, I can't tell you how important it is. It's one of... This is what you have in mind when the Shehechianu is said. So someone's going to make Kiddush and then say Shehechianu, you're going to say the Shehechianu over the Kiddush. You've got to have in mind four things. Well, number one is the eating of a kazayas of matzah, especially first night. First night is Midoraisa. It's one of the biggest money inputs to your account, your current account, in Shemaim with your name on. You've got a paying in book and a debit card. You've got your own current account with Shemaim incorporated. One of the biggest payments into that is that Achilas Matzah. It is a huge mitzvah which cannot be overlooked. We'll talk about what happens to someone's a celiac in a second.
For a man, no difference.
For a man and a woman. No, for a man and a woman.
And just Kazayas.
I'm going to get to that. You've got to do Achilas Matzah. That first bite, that Achilas, I'm going to go through it with you. That's mitzvah number one. Mitzvah number two is Afikoman, the eating of the Afikoman. The Afikoman today is in lieu of giving a Korban Pesach. Really, we've got two things we've got to do. We've got to go to the Beis Hamikdash, and we've got to eat a Korban Pesach with matzah. Hillel says we've got to eat that Korban Pesach wrapped up in matzah. That's why we do the sandwich, kairach, right? But that's not actually, that's only according to his opinion. What you've got to do that night is eat meat that's roasted lamb. You've got to do that. We can't have any roasted meat at the Seder because of it. We don't have roasted meat, any roasted meat or poultry at the Seder for that, says the Shulchan Aruch. We'll talk about that in a second. And we've got to have matzah. Now, we cut matzah in those days was like, Sephardim still have it today. There's quite a few people. It's like a bendy kind of laffa. Right, it's like a flat. They go off very quickly, but they're yummy and they're like a bendy flat laffa. That's real matzah. Today we make kind of like flat crackers, okay? But really, it's basically having a lamb shawarma. So you put lamb, a kazas lamb, in a shawarma, wrap it up, and you have it together. That's the mitzvah. The matzah is a mitzvah. The meat is a mitzvah. Unfortunately, now we're in exile and banished due to our sins, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not seen fit to redeem us and take us back to Yerushalayim where we're going to have a golden Pesach. We have to eat the afikomen, which means what? What does the word afikomen mean? Dessert.
Oh, right.
It means afters. It means afikomen literally means afters. And you have to eat the afikomen, and that is going to be your korban Pesach, which is almost as important as your achilas matzah. It's a little bit less important because it's not really meat. Your achilas matzah is the biggest mitzvah. That is huge. Okay, you got this so far. You with me on this? Yeah? So you've got achilas matzah and afikomen. There's something you've got to do. That all comes under the concept of achilas matzah. Then we've got the next thing we've got to do. Okay? And that is the concept of drinking the four cups. Drinking the four cups. The arba kaisos are mitzvah midrabbanon. It is important. We need to go through what drinking of the four cups means. We're going to do that, okay? Number three is eating. No. Matzah. Afikomen comes under the concept of achilas matzah. Okay, I'm sorry. Oh look! There's a plug. There's plugs there. Oh, there's no plugs. Those are plugs. Okay. Okay. No, I'm so sorry I didn't make that super clear. I tried to say that. Okay. But really, okay. I'm sorry. What is it with you? Not being clear. Number two. Okay. So what do you like? Number two is arba kaisos. Four cups. We're going to define what four cups are. We're going to define that. Okay. You've got to have four cups. It's not a joke. It means something. Number three. Well, number three, right? I'm being super clear. Okay. It's the eating of maror. The eating of maror is a mitzvah midrabbanon. Only the achilas matzah that you have at hamotzi is midoraisa. Okay? Everything. In fact, it's the only food you eat all year, which is definitely midoraisa. Every other food you're eating is a midrabbanon at close, possibly suffix midoraisa. For instance, making Kiddush Friday night, you can do that on wine. You don't have to eat bread. But eating that bread, that flat bread, on matzah first night is the most important food you'll eat the entire year. And we know that serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu by eating food is one of the highest services we can do. It's the only mitzvah that's eaten in the Torah. You've got to eat, you've got to be satisfied, you've got to be blessed. The only blessing that's overtly mentioned in the Torah is after eating specifically bread. And we know that the biggest mitzvah you can do is eating. Eating for God is much more important than fasting for God. Okay, that's why Shalosh Shuddos is so important. That's only a minute. Really, some say it's obligatory, some say it isn't obligatory. The point is, achilas matzah first night is absolutely key. We'll discuss what happens when someone's a celiac and they can't eat matzah and they have to get matzah. We'll discuss it. Okay, then we've got the four cups, then we've got eating mara. The last and fourth mitzvah you've got to have in mind with when the Shekhiano is made. When that Shekhiano is made, you've got to have kavanah for this last bit, and that's relating the story of the Exodus. You have to relate over the story. Now, that could be you reading it, listening to it, saying it over. It's good if you say it over. It's good if you say ideas about it. When you say over an idea of what's going on with the Exodus, you should have in mind, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of Sippur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a special mitzvah for you also. It makes no man, woman, child. Obviously, for a child that's the age of 12 or 13, it's on them as well. Okay? But you have your separate bank account with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, irrelevant of through a man. Okay? You've got to do this. So you've got to read some ideas. You've got to, obviously, we know that Rav Gamliel says Pesach Matzah. The Chasam Sofer says, talk about the 10 plagues. I've got to tell you now, I don't know if anyone's got access to the book, the Medrash Says.
Yeah.
Famous book, right? If we could borrow one, they're on all the Jewish libraries and stuff like that. Go through the bit on Shemois where it talks about some of the 10 plagues. The wonders and the miracles that happened with the 10 plagues will literally blow your socks off. They're unbelievable. Kodesh Baruch Hu made new creatures. The locusts didn't look like regular locusts. What happened with all the creatures? They came in with their own microclimates. So the polar bears came in with all the ice that they needed, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu came in with every single climate of every single creature. One of the creatures was the Yeti, was the abominable snowman. right? Was this Yeti creature called the Adonai Soder, and he came in as one. Now he needs four amas around him because he feeds off of the ground or trees on the ground with his umbilical cord, which he never loses during his life. A Yeti. Have you ever heard of the abominable snowman, the Yeti, the Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the huge ape running around? It's mentioned in the Torah several times. It's a Mishnah. Mishnah in Kalayim, Perik Ches. It's also because he came in there. That was one of the creatures. All wild animals, including the Yeti, was there. But the Yeti needs Arba Amos of ground. Hashem literally lifted. The Vilna Gaon says, because it says, and the ground which they were on. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's what the Torah says. Says the Vilna Gaon, what is the ground? That's specifically for this Yeti creature. Kodesh Baruch Hu had to pick up the ground which he was on, because he needs that for his own nutrition. Put that in Egypt. The octopus. Basically, when that was happening, everyone ran in their house and locked their doors. And the Midrash says the Kodesh Baruch Hu sent octopi and cuttlefish, and they climbed out onto the ground, and their tentacles came and lifted up the latches to open the door to allow the other animals to go in. They worked as a cohesive team. So it was absolutely, there's so much about it. It's absolutely incredible. The more you read about it, the more like, this is amazing. Kodesh Baruch Hu do, sang that over on Pesach night, becomes one of the mitzvahs, the Sanctuary Hechiyanu one. And you've got to have in mind, I just fulfilled a mitzvah. Yeah, it's really amazing, it's really cool, and I've just learned something, it's absolutely incredible. And who knew? That's all to the side. But at the back of your brain, you're going, ching, ching, like dollar sign. You're like, I just did a mitzvah. It's fine to do Lolishma by that, by the way. Just to find, I've got to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's told me to fulfill these mitzvahs for reasons only known to him. I'm doing it, when I gave over this vort over the idea about that, the locust or something like that, or the night was so palpable, and I told you where Hitler is in the Torah from that. Hitler's in the Torah, it's hidden in the Torah during the ninth plague. Yeah, I told you. Yeah, Hitler's mentioned in the Torah directly.
You didn't tell us, no, not even
there.
You've never
told.
You only said.
I have. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where's it?
Okay, in the ninth plate, now.
You have to ring the bell.
Yeah. I do. Listen, what do you think this is? First of all, you made a miscount on the Achilles Malta, and then you started talking about the plugs, trying to get out of that. Second of all, what is it with you not ringing your bell? I know. It's ridiculous. I know. It's like, you know what? It's like, oh, I've got to be professional. Okay.
Funny professional is good.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
And am I doing all right with that?
Yeah.
The Ben Ish Chai explains that all the 10 plagues that happened in Egypt are going to happen again as Mamashiach. But those 10 plagues will be like seeds, and the plagues that we'll see will be like trees. They'll be unimaginably greater, to such an extent that even the Haggadah asks, will we even mention coming out of Egypt after Mashiach has come? Because the miracles will be so overwhelming that we'll think, for Pesach. Yeah, they were big, but not nothing. It was like an acorn versus an oak. Which means all the 10 plagues that were happening in Egypt are forecasts for something that will be happening to us.
Now, or the other nations?
To us.
We're going to get the plague.
Well, let's talk about one of them. The ninth plague was the plague of Choshech. Now, this darkness that God put in wasn't just an absence of light. It was a palpable pea soup-like thickness of goop. It wasn't just, well, you turn off the lights and it was dark and they couldn't see anything. They literally couldn't move. A darkness fell over Egypt that was literally immobilizing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, V'yomesh Choshech, and it will be palpable, it'll be touchable. You're literally, you'll feel this kind of like goopy thing, to such a point as it went on, it actually immobilized the Egyptians. In the beginning they could move around, but it was absolutely pitch black. And as the days intensified, it was all plagues were 7 days, followed by a mini plague of pestilence. Blood, pestilence. Animal death, okay? Frogs, pestilence. Lice, pestilence. When pestilence came, there was a mini pestilence after the pestilence. Deva, right? There was always a pestilence afterwards. It was a bad time for the Egyptians. There was an Egyptian papyrus that was written during the plagues of the Victoria and Albert Museum, written by a Goyishe Egyptian that was lamenting what was happening in Egypt. And he was saying, this is happening, that's happening, this is happening, that's happening. It's at the V&A. You can go see it, written by hand in not hieroglyphs, because in regular Egyptian script, on papyrus from the time, in the exact order that's told in the Torah. First of all, there was plagues, and then all these creatures came out of the Nile. Oh, it was awful, and I lost all my money. And it's in there. That was first-hand, direct, primary evidence to ratify. So overall, really, it was a month. It really, basically, was almost a year. Most of the Jews never saw anything. As Jews, we hardly saw anything. Why? They were living in their own ghetto. It's like they were living in Harbrawton. So they were like Water Park Road and the ancillaries. Yeah, yeah. Don't do anything. There's no going there. There's no going there, right? So imagine like in Saddleworth and in Bolton and in Tameside and in Timperley and all these places. Oh, it was horrendous. There's no Jews there. The Jews that came out, when did they? Why did they only fear God at Yom Suf? They came out, they said, we say it every morning in Shacharis. They feared God and they feared Moses, his servant. What, you had a whole year of plagues and you weren't fearing God? Why? They didn't really see it. They remember, they didn't have text and email and updates on their phones and things like that. It's like, duk, 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 duk. God, you know, you're taken over by frogs or something like that. Have you heard? I'm like, nobody, people were going about their basic days. There were no frogs anywhere. Do you understand what I'm saying? The frogs didn't come into the Jewish shtot. In fact, they stopped at the boundary. So they stopped already at blood. They stopped already at blood. In fact, the first time they made any independent wealth was in the Makkah of Dam. Why? Because they could sell water to the Egyptians. They knew about it. Moshe Rabbeinu came along and turned off the plague. They got angry at him. For the first time in 200 years, making a bit of guilt, and you come along and stop it. And he goes, look, yeah, it's bigger than you. This is bigger than you. They're like, what do you mean it's bigger than you? I've got money in my pocket. I've been living. You should know some Jews are doing very, very well. They weren't enslaved. Dothan and Aviram had their own Jewish slaves. They lived in mansions with Jewish slaves. A lot of Jews enslaved Jews. Dothan and Aviram, that's what they were, very heavy shakers. That's why they didn't even leave, by the way. You know Dothan and Aviram didn't leave? No. All Klal Yisrael left, and Dothan and Aviram's family stayed.
Did I forfeit
that? Yes. I've got the numbers. If you want, I can email you the numbers of how many died and how many came out. 39 million Jews came out. 39 million, minimum. Slow estimate. I've got the math. Came out, which means the number that died was approximately the entire population of Iran in 24 hours. It was the largest culling of Jewish life in human history.
How did you say
603,000
came out?
603,550 men between the ages of 20 and 60, not including their wives, their children, or all their Erev Rav. Do the math. They weren't married only to one woman. Listen to me really carefully. When the women had children, they had six at a time, and we know they had at least nine births. The numbers are actually in the Torah. If you do your math, if it's less than 39 million, it's ridiculous. It's got to be much, much more. I will send you, Beli Nader. It doesn't matter. Okay, I can't go off on that. The math is clear. It's black and white.
The general estimate that's out there.
There's no estimates. There's only miscalculations. If you, that's completely right. If anyone says that, they're utterly uninformed. And they've not done their math. They've not even looked at the Pesukim, whoever they are. And I know Rabbanim have really got into this. If you say that it's less than the entire population of Thailand today, you've completely misunderstood it. You don't understand the numbers and you've not read the Pesukim. Kodesh Baruch Hu's been very clear on the math. Very clear on the math. We're talking about tens of millions of people that came out. Now, how do we get to this?
Hitler.
I was just about telling you about that. Okay, telling about Hitler. We've got a tradition in the Torah that any letter before a letter, if it's substituted for a letter before it, is always a letter of mercy. And if you take a letter in the Torah and you take a letter after it, it's always substituting it for harsh judgment. That's a tradition in the Torah. That's my response. If you took the letter Gimel and you replaced it with the letter Dalet, that would be a harsh din. If you took the letter Gimel and replaced it with the letter Beis, then it'd be a softening and a mercifying of that particular word. You can do that with whole words, which means you can read the entire Torah one letter back, one letter forward. Let's take the letter back from V'yomesh.
Which means?
Palpable. The darkness was palpable. Vov is the first letter of V'yomesh. What's the letter before Vov? Hey. Let's put that. Okay, V'yod, a yud, yud, what? Tess. So, hey, Tess. What's mem?
Lamed.
So, hey, yud, lamed. What's shin?
Reish.
What do you get? Hitler. Hitler was the ninth plague of darkness. Now, we know what that darkness really was. The shock is, it's the letters before. If you take the letters after, you'd get the name of a king who would have been even more cruel than Hitler. And Hitler was actually a chesed.
What? In comparison to the king that would have been.
You can read his name, figure out his name. I would say you shouldn't even say his name, but you can figure out the letters, what his name would have been. It was an option. It was an option. Now, the Ben Ish Chai is explaining that all the 10 plagues have to be worked through before Mashiach comes. It's very...
Wait, what number was darkness?
That was nine. That was nine. Now, hold on. Don't worry. No, don't freak out. But what we're seeing is here that everything has been put into the concept of the Torah. A very interesting idea. In fact, while I'm here... Oh, He never came to power, Baruch Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu absorbed him with the easier one. It doesn't matter. He never came to power. He's never going to come to power. It was an option. It was an option that didn't happen. Now, talking about options, let me show you something here. We're going to say something. You know when you put your little finger around Dam, Tzafadaya, Kinim, right? And you take out some of the wine, which is a symbol of freedom and happiness, with the 10 plagues. Then along comes Reb Yehuda, a Tana. Reb Yehuda is cosmic. He's one of the sages of the Mishnah. Says, you know what? We need to do it again because I'm going to make a Rosh HaTavis. You're going to make a Simon. I'm going to take the first letter of all the plagues and I'm going to go Datsach, Adash, Ba'achav. Asks Rav Aaron Kotler. You get a kid in school to do that. Just take the first letters and like squidge it together and make like an easy word so you can remember it. It's called a simon. We do that all the time. All the way through the Gemara, there's like a simon where you take Rosh HaTavis so you can remember like, you know, different things like Yad Shrechet Dam is all the seven liquids and stuff in the Torah. There's simonim everywhere, so it just helps you remember, right? Oh, I need Reb Yehuda to come and tell me that, who's one of the greatest sages, then we have to put it in the Haggadah, which was compiled by the Anshei Knesset Gadola, but it'd been said non-stop since the time of Moses. It's been added to over the years. In fact, when I went to John Rowland's library, they've got an old Haggadah from 1300 with many of the songs we don't have today anymore. We've lost a lot of them. They've got an old illuminated Haggadah. My wife went to see it. They've got it on slides. And it goes, it's got Perushim on it. It's handwritten and gold leafed. Beautiful, beautiful Haggadah. What they want with it, I'm not quite sure. But in the John Rowland's library. In town, just in town, John Rowland's. You know, like in like Deansgate area? They've got a whole area of Judaica with extremely rare manuscripts, enlightened manuscripts. And one of them is a beautiful Haggadah with pictures, with the lice and the frogs and everything. It's all in there. It's amazing. It's exactly like our, but they've got songs that we don't have anymore. We must have lost them over time.
Does
that
have music notes?
No. Remember, music notes that we've got today were only invented in the 1200 by monks. Yeah, monks. Monks invented regular music. The notes that we have that we read music off of was invented by monks so they could sing their hymns. They invented that concept. The concept of regular music notation that we have was invented by monks. Okay, so now, why do we need the concepts of Datsach Adash Ba'achav? Why do we need this? Why do we need that? What's going on? And this is linking into this concept of what I was just telling you earlier. Rabbi Yehuda says a very interesting idea. It's worth telling. It's worth telling you. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to go and meet Pharaoh early in the morning when he was busy in the Nile. And he was there to stand on the other side of the Nile. Hashem said, take the staff with you. That was a command. So he had to take the staff. Now, what was this staff? Where did he get it? Sorry? It was before Aaron came along, before Aaron used it. Where did he get it? He got it from Yisroi. Yisroi stole the staff and stuck it in his garden, and no one could pull it out of his garden, which is where the Goyim get the idea of Excalibur. That's where Excalibur comes from. King Arthur's sword, Excalibur, the sword and the stone. Yusroi stole it from Pharaoh's palace because he had his eye on it. When Yusroi ran away, when he told Pharaoh not to harm the Jews, Pharaoh was going to kill him, so he realized he probably should leave. When he left, he said, there's something I really want. And he took the staff that came to Pharaoh that he inherited from Yosef. Yosef had the staff because he took it from his family when they came down to Egypt. And they had it all the way from Adamarishan. Where did Adamarishan get it? It was a branch of the Eitz Hadas Tivara, which he snapped off. And he kept it forever since. That was the staff that Moshe Rabbeinu split Yom Suf with. People started to say, it's not him. It's a magic staff. That staff has power. Says the Kasava Kabbalah, and he says like this, when he heard people saying that, he threw it into the ocean, broke another twig and said no. He just threw it away. He just discarded it. Such a precious item. He said, better that than you think, chas v'shalom, for one moment, that any of the power is coming from some kind of inanimate object. There's a Kodesh Baruch Hu doing it. He threw it away into the sea. Just disposed of it, rather than make you think, an interesting idea. Now, on that staff were names of God and other letters. Do you know what letters were on it? Datzach Adash Ba'achav. Says Rav Aaron Kotler, why was it so important? Hashem said, take your staff with you. Every morning he'd stand on one side of the Nile and Pharaoh was on the other. And he'd lift it up and he'd say, you're to let my children go. That's what God's told me to tell you. And the letters of Datzach Adash Ba'achav were on it. Why? He says like this. In Shemaim, in heaven, there's been a gezeira. There's been a gezeira that you can't undo. Like you've been born with blue eyes or brown eyes, you can't undo that. It's genetic. You can't undo it. You cannot undo it. It's a gezeira. You can't undo it. Datzach Adash Ba'achav is happening. How it happens is completely down to you. If you let the children go, as I'm telling you, these letters will come out as blessings for you in your life. Beautiful things will happen. Or less severe things happen if you're not so naughty. But if you're really cruel, the letter Dalet will turn into Dam. And the letter Tzadi will be Tzfadeya. It doesn't have to be. The only thing that's fixed is the letter order. It's Dam Tzfadeya. It could be Dalet, Tzadi, Chof. That's coming your way whether you like it or not. Yeah? How it comes your way? You could be blessed inordinately beyond your wildest dreams. He could have started to convert to Judaism. You know what? Take me with you. I'm happy to go. You know what? I need a vacation. This is a very hard job. And I'm willing to let the Jews go, whatever you want, but please give me protection, like diplomatic immunity, because my people want to kill me if that happens. Let me be absorbed with 20 people and I'll come out with you. B'vakasha, datach adash b'achav is going to happen all for good. For Egypt and for you, it's going to be amazing. What do we learn out from this? Whatever the din in Shemaim is over our heads is fixed. How it comes down into the world is completely on you. You're the one that takes those letters and they could be written. Now, those initials cannot be undone. That has to happen like that. What brochas are going to come your way or what klolas are going to come your way are completely based upon you. But it's going to start with a dollar to start with. That's the way the Kodesh Baruch Hu's organized it. It's on you completely. Every movement you make changes your own gezeira in Shemaim. You might say it's geschrieben. There's nothing, it's true. There's a certain bit which can't be undone. If your gezeira is datach adash ba'achav, you can't rechange the letters, that's a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will. How that comes to you is completely on you. Through the whole year and through your mitzvahs and through your learning and through your increase, you're changing the way Hashem is interacting with you based upon the special formula he's given you for your life. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Pharaoh. He was saying, listen, this isn't written in stone. What's written in stone is only Datzach Adash Ba'achav. How are you going to get those letters? I'm giving you a choice. What do you want to do? Well, I don't like the Jews. Okay, look, I'm telling you the best thing for you to do for your own particular benefit is let the Jews go and you'll be blessed. Yeah, but I don't want to. Then Dalet's going to turn to Dam. I'm warning you. Do you hear what's going on there? Our lives only have a fixed level of set. How we bring that down is your deeds. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was told, take the stuff, I want you to teach Pharaoh a lesson. I want him to understand that it's down on you for this to work. Isn't that an interesting idea? Interesting? Okay, that's how we got to that. And we did Hitler in the Torah and we did all that as well. Now, we got to talk about cups. Ladies, we've got to talk about cups. It's really, really important. I have a magic cup. Okay, fine. All right, no round of applause yet, because thank you very much. This has been buretted, okay, which means I've actually measured specifically into this. This is a regular standard everyday plastic cup. The two opinions as to what a revius is. Revius is a halachic measurement, which literally means quarter. Revius is quarter of a lug. Quarter of a lug. A revius is important. You need to write this down. In order for you to fulfill the mitzvah of any of the arbakaisos, you need to drink a revius, which is 86.4 milliliters. If you ever forget the 86, just look at the gematria of the word kais, which means cup. Chof is 20, Vov is 6, Samach is 60, add it up, you get 86. What Chof, Vov, Samach. What are the chances in William Hill, if you went into William Hill and said that the halachic measurement should be the gematria of the Hebrew word, Brilliant. It gets even better than that. The Chazon Ish argues and says no, has to be kais yogun, a fitting cup. The gematria of kais yogun is 150 mil, and the shear for him is just happens to be 150 mil. So if you, which is what I've done here. This is the Chazon Ish shear, which we don't go by generally. If you want to, you can do that as a hider, but this is the Chazon Ish. This is the Rachnaway, and this is how we go. This, what you're seeing here, is 86.4 mil. Can you see?
How many lines on the cup?
Well, because all different cups are different. It's this much.
It's a small cup.
Do you want me to pull this into so you can see it better? Yeah? Can you want me to do it? Will it help you?
You have to do it.
Yeah, but okay, just so you can see the amount of volume of the water.
Whatever cup you're going to use.
I'm so sorry.
86.4.
With a burette.
What's that?
I used a 86.4 mil. This much liquid. Can you see that? This much liquid. Now, Rebbetzin's, it's not that much. Now, it's important what I'm going to tell you now. Halachically, you don't make an after bracha on any liquid ever during the year unless you've drunk this much within a certain time limit. I'm about to tell you, and it's good you ask. That segues me into the answer. Thank you very much, Mrs. Kestenberg. It's like this. This is well. Okay, it's like this. Kadei shtias revius is the time it takes to drink a revius. And if you don't drink a revius, you don't make an after bracha. You walk away without making an after bracha, and it isn't considered halachic drinking in that sense. You always make a before bracha on anything that tastes nice, except for water, unless you're thirsty. The only pleasure we get from water is quench thirsting. The pleasure we get from other drinks is taste. We never bless an item, we always bless the pleasure. It's the pleasure associated with it. Pleasures are blesserable, not items. The pleasure a cucumber or banana gives you is what's brocherable, not the item. The chocolate's not brocherable. The pleasure associated with it is. You're thanking God for the pleasurable experience. If a food is disgusting, it's unbrocherable because it gives no pleasure. You're only blessing the pleasure. With water, Chazal said the pleasure is thenchquersting, irrelevant to the fact that you like the taste. Which means if you drink water for reasons other than quenching of thirst, it is unbrocherable. Does that make sense? What did I say?
Quench thirsting.
Fence quersting? Well, that's what I meant.
Absolutely.
It has to thirst. It has to quench thirst. You're not allowed to. You make a nachbrochel sipping a hot drink. It's a brochel of a tala, and it's an avera. You need to attune for that on Yom Kippur.
What?
I thought you said the same amount of time.
No, so it's like this. If I sit here, I never make an after brochel hot tea or hot coffee or soup. Soup, you never can drink this amount in two gulps with one pause in between. If you don't drink this amount with two gulps, with one pause in between, you can't make a bracha on it. And for kiddush, if you're making kiddush yourself, or for arba kaisos, listen to me, it's worth coming, you're not yotzi.
Say again?
You're not yotzi because you haven't drunk it. Drinking doesn't mean in a very, very ladylike way like this. Okay, United Synagogue Lean, United Synagogue Lean. I'm going to do United Synagogue Lean. You ready for United Synagogue Lean?
Yeah.
There we are. That's United Synagogue Lean. I just did United Synagogue Lean. There we are. Lovely, lovely, lovely. That's not called doing it, Arbakaisos. For men, a real lean is 45 degrees. Women don't have the custom to lean. But for men, a lean is 45 degrees. So we turn the seats around like this. and the kids have pillows and soft toys that are set aside for Pesach. And you lean like that. That's how. That's the eating of the matzah and the arbakosis. If you want to be mekayim the concept of a seba, of leaning, okay? The idea is here, women don't lean. Women don't lean. You've got to knock this back in two gulps with a thing in between. Now, if you can't do that with wine, don't have wine, have grape juice. Okay? Don't do it. But this is the proper way to drink arbakosis. Now, this is important. So you can be now, there's a din on Pesach that's unlike anything during the year at all. There's no concept of this in Kiddush or anywhere else at all for the whole year. And that's like this. Roiv kos, majority of the cup. One of the simonim of freedom is that you drink deeply, which means you should try to aim to drink more than 51% of the cup, irrelevant of how much is in it. Now, what I suggest is we get cups. We have cups that are 180 mil. The best ones to get are the flutes. They look beautiful, a cup flute. They don't hold very much. They hold 180 mil. When you fill up a flute to 180 mil, immediately upon drinking 86.4 mil, you've already knocked out over 51% of the flute anyway. In which case, you've been yotzi both the amount you need to drink and the hiddur of having rov kais automatically one go. I once went to a house where a guy thought it would be funny, and he bought a celebratory wine glass like that, that he got in part of a set, that looked like a bowl with a stick coming out the bottom. And he filled it up, and it took almost a full bottle of wine. And I said to him, "You got a problem." And he said, no, this has been beautiful. Look at this. I said, "You have to drink 51% of that cup each time." So he remembered, he's like, "Yeah, I do now." He got completely plastered. Now, the problem of that is he can't fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach if you're drunk. So if you eat the afikomen when you're drunk and you go, "Oh, well, there is this guy called Moses, right?" And anyway, it's like Purim, like beyond Purim. You're not even meant to get that drunk for Purim, really. Then it's actually not considered a service. So if it was grape juice and he knocked it back, it would be very hard going. Danny's going to have four of them. Literally, I would have a cup, which basically, that this is a nice cup for Pesach. This had like a wine stem. This is a great cup for Pesach. Even a bit too big, I would answer. So you want to knock back that amount of wine four times, okay? You got to drink a revius. Revius in the time it takes to do it, okay? So sipping gently. Now, once you've knocked that back, if you want to have more, you can sip what you want all the way through, but there is an idea to have rov kos. Some people, says the minig, you try to drain the entire cup. You don't have to do that.
Why are you saying we should get a bigger cup?
Yeah. I'm not talking a cup, 180 is teeny.
But you said you're having 86.
Yes, but then you've also got the majority of the cup.
So majority of 86 is 80?
Yes,
why
that's it.
Okay, if,
no, you can't. There's an idea that when you fill the cup, there's kais yain mole, there's another idea that you should have a full cup. You don't have to. If you can only manage 86 milliliters, you do this. This is the sheer. That's how much grape juice you have to have. It doesn't have to be intoxicating. It's this much. Four times. It's a mitzvah midrabbanon that you're going to fulfill, okay? You just know this, but... I just do this now? I'm just going to do this now. I usually don't make a brain of fascius at the end of leaving the sheer because I'm always sipping Mrs. K's lemon tea. Does this make sense?
Right.
Okay, now watch this. I'm done. Now that means I've mechuved myself, I've obligated myself to make a brain of fascius.
Wow.
Someone I taught drinks 8 cups of coffee a day.
Wow.
I taught him, he says, all coffee, eight. He always sips, he's got, I don't know what it's called, it's like a jug, and it comes out and it drips into the jug and it's on a hot plate. And it keeps it hot all day and he's always taking it out. It's like in a cafe that you would get. Now he drinks a lot. It's all caffeinated coffee. He hates non-caffeinated coffee. It's only black and it's got to be hot.
He's been wired.
He says he's got used to it. And he says if he doesn't have it, he's like... Duh. The problem is on Yom Kippur and stuff like that, he goes bonkers because he can't have, right? So now he's always doing that. Now he goes to the office. He doesn't leave the office. He goes in the morning. He makes one shakol in the morning. He sips. He doesn't leave the office. He doesn't go outside into a different rishus. He just walks out. He's gone through 8 cups. He doesn't say a thing. Why? Because he never drank what I just drank in front of you. Really, a scrupulous individual, don't need to do it. Halachic advice, will wait until it cools down and knock back what I just knocked back in order to be able to make a brain of fascius. I told him to do that. He says, I hate the taste of cold black coffee. So I said, don't do it. You're under no obligation. Soup is the same as well. Now, if you have a cup of soup and you let it cool and you knock back that much soup. If it's clear broth, then you would make a brain of fashion depending upon what the particular brocca is.
Vegetables soup with little pieces.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, that's fine.
You also, it
only if I've drunk exactly what you've seen in those two gulps. If it is so hot, if you're having it with a spoon, there's no way you can make a brain of fashion on soup. It depends. Soups are a very complicated problem, which I'm happy to discuss with you. But generally, if it's got mazonis in, if it's not a garnish, like a couple of croutons on the top, then you would treat it as a solid, and you would make a mazonis and a la miche, only had you make a kazais. And that's a completely different thing. I can't go into that right now. Okay, soup is a fantastic. I love talking about soups in Hilchos Brachos.
Is it a liquid issue, can I ask?
Sorry, what?
Is it only a liquid issue?
Like, is that with chocolates or sweets?
Is brochas only a liquid issue?
No, there's
what I'm talking about now is only to do with liquids. This is this measurement of 86.4 mil is only to do with liquids.
So
why I'm telling you about this is because if you want to fulfill your Arba Kaisos, you should drink a Revi'is. You got to drink a Revi'is. What I've just done, it's really, as you can just quite rightly see, it's not that much.
Right,
but it's better to even have even more.
No, you don't have to have any more.
Like, why don't we all have smaller cups and then finish the whole thing? So
you can finish the whole cup, because as an Indian, finishing the cup.
We should have smaller cups.
I would say it's easier to have a smaller cup because you knock out two things. One is you've got your ages to become four, and you've done Rove Kais, and you've even gone beyond having finishing the whole cup, which is a hiddah. It's a beautification of it. It's an extra beautification of the mitzvah. That's the hiddah of the mitzvah. Now, Rebbetzins, oh, I don't have time. Rebbetzins, you've got to eat the right amount of matzah.
What is that? Yeah, that we need to just know.
The right amount of matzah. Now, it's like this. Now, listen to me very carefully. Many people do not know this. Men, women, and children, they do not know this, and they've been probably... I was told wrong how to do things. Yeah. You've got to know people do not know what's going on with hamotzi and katsatsu. This is so important. There's a school in town which serves the wrong amount of bread, and they tell the kids to make hamotzi. Listen to me very carefully. I should say this only once. Now, listen to me. You've got to listen to me. This is really, really important. Whenever you eat any morsel of bread ever, for any reason... The bracha before eating bread is a motzi, irrelevant of how much you're eating. A crumb, the size of a rice grain, you would need to make a motzi. There is a din midrabanan before eating any bread, you should lave your hands. Irrelevant of the amount of bread you're eating. But you're not allowed to make the bracha of al netilas yadayim unless you are committing to eating an egg bulk, not an olive bulk, an egg bulk. Listen to me carefully because it's misunderstood. Brilliant book. He's taken full colour photographs of all items and told you exactly how much is necessary to make a brocha and an after brocha. They're all actual size. Oh, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. An egg bulk. Now, let me show you. Regularly, for breads during the year, if you're going to eat bread, you're going to have this much bread just in order to bench Birchas Hamazon.
Half a slice.
Of regular slice from a sliced loaf from the middle of a loaf. That would obligate you to say Birchas Hamazon, irrelevant of what you did to start with. You'd wash without a brocha, make a motzi, eat that, and do fill Birchas Hamazon. If you made a brocha, al netilas yadayim, you are obligated to eat more than this. It's another quarter on top. It's three quarters of a slice. Okay? So it's an egg bulk is like, if that's half a slice, it's that and that bit on the side. If that makes sense. You're obligating yourself to have a kabetze if you've said al netilas yadayim. Once you've had a kazayis, an olive bulk, which is this half a slice, you've got a bench. But in order to fulfill the content of the al netilas yadayim, you're committing to more than a kazayis, to more than an olive, which is 28.8 grams. You're now looking at about 35, 36 grams of bread because you said al netilas yadayim. The al netilas yadayim only goes on a more meal type amount, and that's an egg bulk. That means you've got to have a kabetza, not a kazayis of matzah, if you said al netilas yadayim, which you almost certainly did when you go and went to wash your hands before chilas matzah, which means you've got to eat slightly more matzah. This, by the way, during the year, is a kazayis of matzah. That's a kazayis of matzah. During Pesach, the kabetza, the shear that you've got to have, is one whole sheet, which is why they made the sheets that size. A sheet of regular machine matzah is the size you have to have for your chilas matzah.
Throughout the whole seder?
No. For your achilles matzah and afikoman. Achilles matzah, you've got to have, after you've washed, when you... Kyriakos less. Kyriakos less, you have much less, much less. Afikomen and matzah is one sheet. One sheet of regular... How you bulk it up. Let's say you're only having machine. I'm making it up for a second. You're only having machine. Someone gives you a bit of like the actual broken matzah from the middle matzah and a sheet of machine. You eat the sheet of machine and you're done according to every bit. That's why they made...
Half a sheet. It's
huge,
the round ones.
I'm not talking. Not machine. Not hand bake. Machine. Machine, but. Why are all machine matzo square? If they stack nicely. Brilliant. So practical. Love it. That's not the reason. Okay. All machine matzos were originally round, they were round. They were on ancient machines in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they were came like a cookie dough thing, and there was a cookie press that came and went chunk, 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 and it cut these beautiful round matzahs, because all matzahs are round. Why do we know matzahs are round? Because the word egul. Avraham told Sarah Imenu, go make cakes, uga, is loshen egul, and we know it was Pesach. So the matzahs she made were round, loshen egul, they were circles. We know Sarah Imenu's matzahs are round. That's a Rashi. Okay? We know that she made round matzahs. So round matzahs is good enough for her, it's good enough for us. If it's Bubba, it's having round matzahs, I'm good to go with Sari Imenu. Don't get better than that. So of course, when you make machine matzahs, we're going to make them round because of Bubba. Does that make sense? Is everyone okay with me on this? Problem was, Chasam Sofer himself went in to do Hashgacha. These cookie cutters are coming out. And what's happening when you make a cookie cutter on a dough? Well, there's all the excess. And what were they doing round the excess? All the square, because it came out in a rectangular sheet, and they snapped out the circles, they cooked the circles, then they took all the corners of the excess, chucked them back in the hopper and used them again, because it's a waste of dough. And that contravened 18 minutes, and the whole thing was chometz. The only matzahs which were kosher were the first run. He therefore banned all circular machine matzahs forevermore, so there'd be no problems with the offcuts on the sides. Being so much so, Chassidim, who follow the Chasam Sofer, are so mukbid against machine matzahs that if you set up an Erev with a machine matzah, they hold its treif on Pesach, over Shabbos Pesach, they won't carry in it because you can't eat a machine matzah. Now, today, our machine matzahs are super kosher because today, of course, why did he say make it square? Because you just cut across them and there's no excess, in which case no one's going to think maybe I'll make an extra few bob by putting the dough. Today, they came up and they said, listen, today we've got much better machines. We can squeeze out the dough into a mold and extrude it into a perfect circle and there'd be no excess at all and it will look beautiful. So let's have round machine matzahs. Ah, it's better, no? But because what the Chasam Sofer said, it doesn't get undone, and all machine matzahs are now square because of the unscrupulous bakers that used to take the offcuts and actually put them and made everything chometz. Even though today we completely obviate the problem with modern technology. But that's why machine matzahs, when they're going to make machine matzah square, how much are they going to make them? One sheet is your matzah, one sheet is your afikomen. That's why during the year, they did it like that. So this sheet is during the year, kazais. But you need more than that. You're going to need more than that. That's a very interesting idea, right? That's why machine matzahs are actually that size. Isn't that great? So yes, for Achilles Matzah, you've got to get your way through one mechanical sheet. For Afikomen, one mechanical sheet. Four matzahs across two Seidonites. That's four matzahs. The sandwiches are less. It's about this much. And you can break it in half. And then you break it in half again to make a sandwich. So actually, that snapped in half isn't really not very much. This is actual size, 100% macro photography. This is during the year. This is during this. It's not Pesach. That's right. I'm not talking about. I understand because you've already made. You already washed on the Achilles matzah. That's why Kairach is not a problem. No, for this. If you wash without a brocha. If you wash with. Okay, that's what. I understand. I'm telling you the law. If you're making it until Ashadayim, that's why in schools, they often make all the kids wash until Ashadayim. They give them a bit of bread that big. And then they all bench. Sometimes the bread isn't even enough to bench on, so all the birchas hamazon is completely levatala. In schools. I grew up like that. They gave that much bread, and we all had to sing birchas hamazon, and the person who sung birchas hamazon the best got a little bencher. And after 5 years of doing it, I only got one once. And I treasured it until it fell apart. And they gave me only that much bread. That's not enough to bench on. You walk off. If you eat this much bread, you walk off. So no. So honestly, you're not allowed to make an alamichia. You can't make an alamichia on bread ever. If you make an alamicha and bread, it's a brochel of a tola. It doesn't count. Alamicha is not a bidi of a benching. It doesn't count at all. Even if it's honest bread, if you're eating it as a meal, it becomes bread.
Okay.
It's bread. People do not know the halachas. In Bnei Brak, Rav Vosna banned the breaking of mezonos bread because people were misusing it. Mezonos bread is only mezonos if it's a snack. You can if it was a snack. There seems to be confusion. Listen to me very, very carefully. Mezonos bread is always hamotzi. Always. Cake is hamotzi. I've made hamotzi on cake.
Do we need to wash on it as well?
If you, yes, of course. I've washed on chocolate cake.
So what's the point of
listen to me. Listen to me. This is the law. It's called Pasha Abor B'Kisnin. Listen to me very carefully. Anything where anyone would eat a mezonos in pinch, because I don't have bread, has the dinner bread if it looks like bread. Cake, sponge cake, is bread-like. It's called Teresa de Nahama. Bread-like properties and appearance. It's squidgy and it's fluffy and it's got bubbles in. Strudel and things like that, not. And pasta, never. Which is why your shami cooker was invented. So you can eat as much as you want. You can never bench on it. You only do ala mechia. You understand? That's why, because people were overeating at kiddushim. And they were being mechayev themselves. That's why your shami cooker was invented. Noodle cooker was invented to avoid this problem. That's why they invented it, right? This is really, really important, okay? So it's like this. Mezonos bread is always hamotzi, and it's always for benching, unless it's only eaten as a snack, and you're having less than two rounds. Two whole sandwiches. Two sandwiches. I will believe Nader, send the email with all the numbers in. And I've done a lot of research on it with lots of people, with Rabbi Gordon in Eretz Yisrael, who's gone through how many Bechairos they were. There had to be millions. I've done all the math. I'll send it through to you. Do you get the emails?
Yeah,
do you go? Okay. Shall have a wonderful Chag Kosher
Sameach.
Think
about what the
you should. Okay. So first of all, the first and most important thing is you've got to think that you're fulfilling a mitzvah meduraisa, that is one of the most important mitzvahs you fulfill the entire year. Also, you're thinking about eating bread of freedom and slavery at the same time. You're both a slave to your own desires and free to serve Hashem at the same time. Like we were slaves in Egypt and then we became free and we ate the same food. Slave food is matzah bread and free food is matzah bread. As you're chewing it, you're realizing this is both the taste of my own slavery to my own desires and the ability for me to serve Hashem at the same time. And I'm fulfilling an unimaginable mitzvah. Have that in mind and have an amazing Pesach.